We're back with another episode of This Week in Zoth, Jeff and Chad. And this week, we have a very special guest, Doug.
Hey, girl.
And kind of the first question we like to ask people right off the bat, is what's the biggest mistake you've made, or the funniest mistake you've made in software?
The biggest mistake I've made in software? I was just talking about this the other day. It's when I when we set up our Accelerate Commerce database for the for the currency, I used a floating point data type in the database, which is fine for individual orders. But anytime you aggregated all that data together, we were always off for it by a few cents.
By a few pennies. I remember those days.
Perpetually chasing pennies around.
I didn't know any better.
We also were...
I don't know if that's the most embarrassing one.
Yeah.
That's just the worst mistake I've made. Okay.
That was the... I remember like the ASCII or ASCII characters instead of multi-bytes. We couldn't do foreign. Foreign was difficult for us.
Yeah, yeah.
That one actually I don't think hurt us that bad, though.
I think, Chad, I think the key is, fortunately, any of the companies I worked for, they didn't rely on me actually writing a lot of software, so...
so that's your bit.
Any really tragic mistakes. There's probably something else, though. Did you come up with something there that...
No. You thought that's, Chad would bring an embarrassing story for you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably there for it.
I assumed Doug was going to say this moment was the most embarrassing moment so far. But
not yet. It has that potential, though.
It does have that potential when he plays it back.
Yeah.
Now, this week, we got Yaya's Pizza. Doug recommended it. And it's a local pizza, if anybody's curious.
Great pizza.
And we actually got the local from the local pizza. So what do we think of the Yaya's local?
Well, I notice you're not picking any of the vegetables off the top of it. Are you required to eat it as it's delivered, or are you...
As long as it doesn't have anchovies.
Chad, because he might be a little selective about what he wants on his pizzas. There's green onions, or olives, onions, green peppers.
This has nearly like the perfect list of stuff.
Okay.
Mushrooms.
I have zero complaints about this.
What?
Yeah.
There are mushrooms on this.
Mushrooms don't have much flavor. I can deal with them. I like black olives. I always like black olives. Peppers are good. Onions are good.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't order it because I was trying to pick something that you wouldn't like, but... But it's the, you know, you want to order something off there. Rather than build your own, I feel like you got to order one of their signature pizzas, and I think the local's kind of one of their signature ones.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best.
Yeah.
They had some unusual ones. And
the one with potato and broccoli is good. The Atlantic is pretty good. Beeb's a big Yaya's guy.
Yeah.
I bet he picked that too.
You know, pizza's one of those things I don't have very often, so when I do, I don't want to experiment.
You don't eat pizza very often.
I mean...
Not like daily?
No.
So we usually put a rating.
I think I've had a pizza recently, though. We made pizzas the other day. What's that?
We usually rate it. But 1 to 10, where'd you put this?
2 bites in? Well, I like thin crust, right? And, you know, and then pizza has a handle, just like bread has a handle, right?
Sure.
They're edible, but they're optional. You don't have to eat them. It's a handle, right? I'm making that a thing. I'm working on that. So the handles on the Yaya's pizza is really subtle. So I might actually end up eating the handle instead of leaving it on the plate.
But you could leave it.
Oh, yeah. It is a handle. You're not required to eat
it.
They never intended for you to eat the handle. They just made it biodegradable because, you know, they're environmentally conscious.
I did not know this. We learned something today.
Yeah.
About pizza.
I'd give it an 8 or a 9.
8 or 9? Godad, what do you think? You were like a 7.3 last week, so it was pretty a...
But I actually don't like black olives and I don't like mushrooms.
Oh, wow. And you thought you were blaming me, Doug, for being the one that was selective.
But I always try them. I always try them. So if I try a dish with them and I know I don't like it, okay, that's fine. I don't have to eat anymore. But I'd probably give this like a 4.6. It's still pizza. It's still good. And the Yaya's crust is amazing, and everything else is great. But take those two off there, and this is probably like an 8.
I would, in the military, we would call you collateral damage. You were not the intended target of the...
That's fine. Take the flag.
I don't know. For me, probably a... I'd probably go an 8. It's really high. The crust is great. I actually think this is like a all toppings that I do really like on pizza.
Okay.
I like onions, peppers, black olives, pepperoni. Who doesn't like pepperoni? Mm-hmm. So this is like nearly perfect.
And the pepperoni doesn't have a bunch of grease sitting on it.
Yeah.
True. We did catch some strays for our ratings of last week's pizza.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't be it there. I haven't heard about this. Well, admittedly, we don't check the comments or read the comments. I just want to be very clear. But go ahead.
Doug will.
Okay, Doug may. I will not. Go ahead.
We just got some flack that any Valentino's pizza should not be rated higher than 5.
Oh, wow.
I disagree.
Those people did not try the chicken bacon ranch.
Any pizza can be good.
Yes.
But here's the problem with Valentino's pizza, because the way they cut it, not every piece has a handle.
Oh, that's very interesting. That wasn't one of our rating requirements.
Yes. Yeah, that's a technical flaw.
Yeah.
So when they
we ate external pieces probably at the time.
Yeah. It's a higher difficulty rating though, so the score might be
higher. Did when somebody asked you to rate something 1 to 10, do you think about the NPS scores?
I do a little bit sometimes.
So you rated an 8. That means you're passive.
See, we kind of did go through this a little bit last time. A
little bit.
8 is definitely a recommend. 9 and 10 are like best pizzas ever. Like 10, okay. Best pizza ever. 9, very high. I think the NPS scale doesn't quite apply to this. I'm definitely in the recommend.
Okay.
I would recommend this pizza to most humans.
Because on the off chance that somebody in Yaya's company sees your video, now it's clear.
They will not let us film there.
We love your pizza. We do recommend. We are looking for sponsorship. But, you know, kind of talking pizza, which we could do for hours. I was thinking, Doug, kind of what are some of the big changes you've seen in software since you've been in it?
Were these some of the questions you were supposed to see me beforehand?
Yeah. Actually, we have to debate whether it's better to get like a true random response or preceded. We're trying the random response with you.
Actually, I think it's probably better to do it randomly, even though, you know, I don't like to be...
Doug likes to be prepared.
Put on the spot, yeah.
Doug likes to be prepared.
I like to ponder things a little bit.
Yeah.
So, since you didn't, the what you get is likely some rambling responses. Fire on. Yeah. So, man, that's kind of hard to nail that down, because if you think about it, Chad, I've kind of been in this for... almost 40 years now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
most of your life.
Yeah, so some might say, wow, was there software when you started? Well, there's a couple of things. There's just like the problems that you're trying to solve have obviously changed quite a bit. You know, when you were... When I first kind of got into commercial software, getting out of McDonnell Douglas, you know, we were developing software there, but that was more like embedded systems and things like that for aircraft. But when you got into commercial software, very little of it was like networkable, you know, highly complex network software. A lot of it was like desktop software. So you're trying to solve problems for a individual or a business unit. You know, so many things would have been built on top of Microsoft Access. Mm-hmm. You know, databases instead of like robust relational database systems and stuff like that. Like SQL Server was really in its infancy. I mean, I think they just split from Sybase back in when I started for healthcare communications back in '95. Because I know we had a copy of Sybase SQL Server and Microsoft SQL Server that we were evaluating, and Oracle, like Oracle 7.1. Oh no, it was pre that. We were building applications that were being used inside dentist office. Some of it was network, but it was like Apple Talk networks and things like that.
You're just communicating to the database.
Yeah, the whole idea of, I mean, none of the computers we were using. I think we had Ethernet connections at our office for our computers and things like that, but you know, that wasn't very common back then, even within the office.
It was a big day when you could get everybody connected so you could play Doom or
Wolfenstein. Right, that was at Accelerate, yeah. The other thing was, you know, and I didn't know that much about the mechanics of writing software, But I do remember we just, you know, that we weren't using, you know, modern languages that do memory management, things like that. So things were being written in C or C++, and we just spent an inordinate amount of time chasing, you know, ghosts in the machine that were creating memory leaks. And it was, I remember thinking, we're wasting a lot of time on this stuff. I mean, just almost all of our time, it felt like we were chasing some problem that was causing the software to crash after a certain amount of time of use. So that, the language has changed a lot, and the development environment has changed a lot. You know, we didn't have any audit, I remember when we first started using NUnit back in the early 2000s, I thought that was so cool to be able to write a framework for writing automated tests and then running them. You know, we weren't nowhere near writing software that was going to be testable, by the way. But we were, you kind of started to get a sense for what it was going to take to write software that was testable. So those were big changes there. And then the problems just got so much more complex. You know, once .NET and things like that came out, you started getting access to various libraries people were writing that were making things easier, things like Unity Framework. And I'm sure this stuff was happening on the Java side too, with some of the ORMs and stuff like that, that were starting to remove some of the tedious work. You know, every project we started, every new project we started back, it seemed like the first thing we talked about is what are we going to do to write the data access layer? We were always spending all this time writing that layer that was integrating with the data store and stuff like that. Now we don't really deal with that as much anymore. And I do remember back in, I was thinking back when the Kinect came out, back in, jumping forward here quite a bit, when the Kinect came out, and that would have been like 2011 or 2012.
Something like that, yeah.
And Steve went and bought a bunch of them, and we started hacking around. I didn't, but folks started hacking around with it a little bit. And then we got really ambitious, and we're going to create computer vision applications, not using the Kinect SDK. This is all even before the Kinect SDK even came out. We're using OpenCV, right? Is that what it is?
The OpenCV.
And trying to find things in the scene, whether it's the depth data or the RGB data and things like that. And we're gonna, you know, we started working at the University of Nebraska and came up with this use case to be able to build an application that was gonna sit there and watch athletes, find athletes in there, find, you know, the weightlifting equipment they're using, and be able to track their velocity with a high degree of accuracy and never miss a rep. And I mean, we were just kind of silly.
That never missing a rep.
Yeah.
When you're using a bunch of unproven technology is
way harder
than people.
Right. These strength coaches who don't know anything about technology would set the bar, I mean, as high as you could. They say, I'm only going to use this if it's perfect every time, you know. But
software is almost impossible.
I remember we were in a meeting once then. We started this project with the University of Nebraska football team in the fall. It was like September. We're like, okay, we're going to build this thing, and it'll be ready by the time they start weightlifting in January. We missed the January date. I mean, 3-4 months, you're really going to make that happen? And we started with just trying to track the human, you know, and find the human. And eventually we're often talking about, is there a better way for us to do this? Are we overcomplicating this thing? And I have a tendency to want to kind of just try to make things as simple as possible. And some people are like, we got to figure out how to, you know, skeletize these people in the scene. And I don't remember kind of how it eventually came, but much like the fall prevention, it's like, we don't have to predict when they're going to fall. We just have to predict when they're going to get out of bed. And same way with the weightlifting, we just have to find the thing in the scene that represents the velocity. And what is that? What's the bar? And so that was probably November, December when we kind of made that shift to that. But where I'm going to with this is we were just this group of, I mean, there couldn't have been more than 20 people in the whole company at that point, maybe 30 total. Not all of them were developers. We had maybe 12 or 15 developers, and we're building this computer vision application to be able to do something really complicated. And I kept thinking, I can't believe we're even trying to tackle this. You know, this is not something that I would think would come out of a small group of people. I have no background in this. in Lincoln, Nebraska, trying to make this happen. And we did, even though at one point, and this is the only time I've really ever had to say this in a project, we got to a point where we just couldn't, we were struggling to get the kind of fidelity in the tracking. And some non-engineering people were in a room demanding to know when this thing was going to be
done.
Literally. And it's the only time I've ever had to say this in my life. I sat there and I said, you have to understand, we may never make this work. You know, and I came to the realization, it's like, pretty much every other piece of software I've worked on to this point, we were going to have, the solution was there, we just had to make it. You know, it was, the outcome was not in doubt. It was like, how long was it going to take? You know, how many bugs did it have and things like that. But we were going to be able to create a system for dentists to be able to manage their patients' data or being able to process software transactions over the internet and stuff like that. But this thing where I was like, it may not work. You know, it may not, and we were well into this. And I think that was kind of a shock to everybody and a little bit of a shock to me that, you know, that you don't work on too many projects and still since then, pretty much everything we worked on since then, deterministic, not really. There's only a couple of these things, Elite Form and Acuvera, mm-hmm. where it's like, not sure we can actually make this work. I'm not sure the technology is there to make that work. So that's my 30-second, what have I seen change the most in software.
Should I call it all olives or should I take this?
Take whichever one you want. That one.
I kind of want the other one.
Okay, take the other one.
Hi, Jeff.
As someone who came from a quote-unquote non-traditional route of getting into the software industry,
mm-hmm.
what advice would you give to the people that are making or wanting to make a similar transition?
Yeah, so when I first started working, after McDonnell Douglas, because I didn't write software at McDonnell Douglas, but the people did, they were all electrical engineers. They hired electrical engineers, which was my background, which I thought was a little weird, because I didn't take any software in college.
Even Pascal.
And Fortran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that counts.
One credit hour, Pascal, Chad.
That's a lot of hours.
It helped me when I could read ADA as soon as I did, saw it. I was like, hey, I know this. That people are going to be looking up. If anybody watches this, they're going to be looking up ADA. What's that?
I don't know if that's really used anymore at all.
I think it's still used in DOD.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I think. But, I mean, there's some aircraft, the C-17, the C-17 was written with an ADA operating system, but they may have switched, I mean, it's been 30 years, maybe they switched that out.
Yeah.
Anyway, when I came back to Lincoln here and started working for Healthcare Communications, I think Harry Waguna was the only guy who actually had a education in computer science. Everybody else was self-taught. And so that didn't seem weird. But once I started getting into being more in a role where I was actually maybe writing some software, I realized that there was, you know, this was, again, starting probably early 2000s. Systems were starting to get more complicated. Accelerate was a client-server network, based system that was an internet network-based system. So it was a distributed system. And the programming languages were using .NET and things like that. I realized there's a lot about software I do not know anything about. And whereas I could get by with that when I was programming access databases and things like that to be used by an individual or in a small work group, I felt a huge deficiency just in terms of my understanding of computing foundations and things like that. People would throw out terms and I'm like, I don't know anything about that. And, you know, I can remember some kind of, you know, I wrote a bunch of Visual Basic and we started talking about, Chad and I were talking about this the other day. You know, passing values to methods by reference or by value. I didn't even know what the difference was. And so I spent a lot of time trying to educate myself on that, a number of books. I would challenge, like in our company, I'll bet nobody has read as many books on computer science and things like that as I have. Chad might, maybe Chad has, but.
Time factor.
Time factor might have something to do with that. And lack of knowledge might have something to do with that too. But I was always driven to understand. And it wasn't just the programming stuff. It was more software engineering. And because that resonated with me because I was had an engineering background. And I kind of felt like that was probably, that was an area where I could contribute and maybe help with my, what was something that might be a weakness with people who are just computer science, we're more focused on computer science in their education. Because I always felt like them, you know, the, I always felt like software should be something that is a medium for doing engineering and not just this other, you know, there was a time where people were like, well, software is more of an art. You gotta get, you can't stifle people's creativity. It's not, I've never felt it was an art. I felt it was just, you're trying to solve problems like an engineer would in any other medium. It's just software is a different medium. Just like wood is and steel is and, you know, and electrons are, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just a different medium. So I was always, I kind of came at it from the software, from the engineering side. But when we started Nebraska Global and we're going to start companies, about that time, so it's been around 2010, we started to, at least I started to recognize the fact that somebody coming into this career field that is, that has spent time just kind of noodling around with programming and things like that was going to be at a huge disadvantage in terms of just being able to be a productive contributor. There was just so much additional knowledge and understanding of the field of computing that was necessary just to kind of get in the door. Mm-hmm. Right? It wasn't just about understanding different control structures and things like that. It was becoming much less about programming and the coding aspect, of it, which we often talk about as being the manufacturing part of software, to being the other things, the planning for how to design this to be used. You know, and I'm working on a team with a bunch of other people. I have to write code that they can understand, they can consume. And so, consequently, there's almost nobody, with a handful of exceptions, of people, although you might have some, do you have some educational background in software?
My grades would have said I didn't get much out of it.
But you did take some classes.
Yeah, about 2.5-3 years.
Oh, quite a bit.
Before I switched. Well, yeah, but I failed almost every class.
Yeah, well, really, this did not come up in the interview, apparently.
Yeah, our interview process, we need to mark this down.
Yeah.
But pretty much nobody at Dompang Labs, and I would say this is pretty consistent in the industry at large, is coming into the career field without some sort of an educational experience before that. And that doesn't mean a four-year degree at UNL, right? Obviously, we have our Pathways program, which has been incredibly successful, and I think is a great path for people who a four-year or two-year school program is not even viable because they have a job, they have responsibilities and things like that. But it, you know, it is, that program, for example, is focused on trying to give them a similar education as they would in a four-year program. Mm-hmm. And so it is going to take some education to do that. But not just education, because I think that the pairing of internships early on, like when we first started Nebraska Global, nobody was interning underclassmen, really, freshmen and sophomore at college. Nobody was interning then. We were able to intern pretty much the entire freshman cohort of the Rake School because nobody was recruiting them. You wouldn't be able to do that anymore. Now people are trying to recruit, trying to intern early. And it's that internship is beneficial for the students because then they get real-world practical experience. It gives them some context in the classroom to understand kind of what's important, how, you know, classroom teaching at a college level has a lot of room for improvement, right? Everything is, again, talking about determinism. All the assignments have, a lot of them have one answer. You know, there's very few things in our career field where you're driving towards that single one perfect answer for anything. And so I think it's hard to translate what you learn in the classroom to what you learn in the real world because everything is kind of chaotic. You know, you're trying to, you don't have perfect requirements. You don't have a perfectly reliable network. You don't have all kinds of other issues, which are common in engineering. So I do think you need some educational background. If you're in high school, when Parker, who was born in 1996, so he would have gone into high school, how old are they? 15? 2011 maybe? Are they 15 when they get into high freshman?
No.
16, 17. Yeah, I think it was probably 15. 14, 15 or 16. 14?
Yeah, 8th grade or 13.
Really? Okay.
Eighth grade, 13. But she will turn 14 this year.
So 14 or 15. Yeah. I think he probably turned 15 right after he started because he was born in November. But I remember telling him, make sure you take a programming class in high school. Because the problem with this career field is, for a lot of career fields, if you're going to be a teacher, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a police officer, you're going to be a fireman, you're going to be a, you know, you name it. I want to, you know, a nurse. Mm-hmm. You probably have, kids probably have some idea of what that job is like because they probably have engaged with those professions somewhere along the lines. With software, I don't think you really know whether it's something you like unless you actually try it.
True.
And so I felt like with my kids, all three of them, I said, I think it's important that they experience it, because I think it's good also that, and we've changed that in the state of Nebraska, students are going to have to take a computer science class to graduate now. And that doesn't mean learning how to use Excel. I mean, an actual computer science principles class. Because I think every student should have that. Not just because every student goes into the career field, but it's important to understand that it's such a big part of our world now is computing. But anyway, if you're in high school, take advantage of that. Take advantage of a one semester in programming and get that experience. And you may not like it, but you may find it's tons of fun, because it is a lot of fun. Because you get, writing software, you get this immediate return on your investment. I remember that was one of the first things that one of these EEs down in McDonnell Douglas told me, one of my best friends actually. I said, why did you pick software? He's like, oh, I can sit there and I can write something and I can hit run and I see the results of my effort. Know, right away. Yeah. So that's really kind of that constant feedback loop is really intoxicating for a lot of people. But so if you're in high school, definitely take advantage of that. See if it's something that's a career field for you. There's still not a lot of young ladies, not a lot of minorities getting into this career field. I think the reason is that they don't get exposed to it at an early enough age.
Yeah.
How's that?
Any
follow-up question?
And I'm assuming you'd recommend people beyond the high school age to look into the Pathways program and reach out to Malika.
Yeah, yes. I didn't really talk about that, but...
How do we not talk about Malika? Just think of how much we can just...
Okay. If you happen to get out of high school and go to college for something else, or not go to college and feel like, oh, I missed that window, there are other paths to getting this.
Yeah.
And that, you know, sometimes that could be going to Southeast Community College. I think Pathways is a great path for that because you know you have a job at the other end of that. You have strong mentorship through. You have an excellent instructor leading you through that. You and Alec from Dome. But all is not lost if you, and it happens a lot. People, it's hard to know what you want to do coming out of high school. I mean, why did I go into electrical engineering? It sounded exotic. Yeah. And I didn't have to take a foreign language.
I get that.
And once I got in there, my emphasis was analog circuit design, which has no use pretty much at all. That's not entirely true, but in a digital world, there's less call for, creating analog
systems. You probably design us a filter for our speakers.
Yeah, audio and things like that.
Amplifier things.
Yeah. There you go. Look at you. You know the language. But, why did I pick that? I don't know. I could have used some better guidance in college, that's for sure. But my point is, you just don't really know. And to some extent, it doesn't really matter. I don't use any of those details in my job, but I definitely use that kind of education, the problem solving, just the whole mindset.
Yeah. I'd have been a welder if I'd go back and do it again.
That wouldn't be bad.
Just start welding.
I would enjoy that. I learned to weld. I kid you not, I learned to weld in 8th and 9th grade.
Yeah, they
in
don't
school.
Do a lot of that. The middle school I taught at had welding and metalworking and a metal lathe down in the shop that no one used anymore, but they used to teach that.
Yeah,
we used to teach that grade.
Well, high school taught welding. It was fun. One of the kids, did you do acetylene welding? You remember, like, sometimes it'd make that sound, it was like going back up the hose, you need to turn it off really quick, right? I remember one of them, supposedly it's pretty bad. I still remember, like, one of the kids, not me right now, as you can see in Doug's eyes, was that you?
Or Chad's friend.
Yeah, Chad's friend. just set it down and walked off. Oof. We're like all staring around, going, turning off our, you know, welders. Where's the sound coming from? We figured it out. But it was a scary slash intense. It was a good moment. It's good.
Real good.
And again, since this is going to be on Career Pathway, you can like it there.
Yep.
If it's on the YouTube version, you can like. You can leave comments. We won't read the comments, so I would just recommend liking, subscribe.
Ring the bell, or Chad will do that again.
Yes.
When you say subscribe, the subscribe button lights up. So look at that go down there.
Yeah. it's a little victory for you. Yes. If you can find the button.
Yeah, give it a click.
Anything left?
No.
All right. Who's next week?
Bill will be up next week.
Yeah. Are we letting him pick the pizza?
Ooh. What do you think pizza? What pizza would he not like?
What if the previous guest picks the pizza for the next guest?
That's kind of fun.
I like that. I like where we're going with that. What is it, Doug?
Bill will eat just about anything.
He will eat just about anything. We actually said
so
that.
Now I'm feeling like I got to target you now again.
I would like to point out who liked the pizza better today.
Not Jeff.
That's true.
What pizza are you going with?
I don't know.
We are going to be doing it downtown, so if you could keep a pizza that's downtown.
It'd be like a Blaze pizza. Oh. Do Blaze pizza.
Okay.
Get the protein pizza. It's a gluten-free crust.
Okay.
And it had... I don't remember what was on it. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah, this doesn't sound negative.
It's not.
Okay.
No, I got it. It's called the protein pizza at Blaze.
Okay.
It was good. Okay. I think you'd like it. I like a gluten free. It's like maybe a cauliflower or something like that. Yeah. It's crunchy. It was really crackery.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're ever in Missouri, go get Emo's Pizza in St. Louis. It's the thinnest crust pizza you'll ever have.
Something like lavash, like crackery kind of crust.
Theirs is a little softer at Emo's. More like this is here, but that I remember that pizza I had at Blaze was pretty crackery.
Okay,
it was good.
We'll try that for Bill on our next week.
Tune in next week.
Tune in next week.
Thanks for buying me pizza, Jim.
Yeah.